everything can change in your business with the right conversation. So you introduce me to somebody, I introduce you to somebody, it changes your worldview. All of a sudden, that conversation leads to something else and your business has completely changed. Revenue's changed. Everything's changed. And so there's just limitless possibilities with entrepreneurship. And it only ends when you quit. That's it.
Hello, I'm Steve Klass with the business breakthrough you've been waiting for. We're here taking service businesses to $1 million and beyond. Let's see what kind of impact the next 30 minutes will have on your life and your business.
What's going on, my classy family over here? I know I'm getting cheesy. I've probably been saying this for a couple of episodes now, as far as guest counts. But for this particular guest, my dear friend Chris Reynolds, he is the founder and owner of the M3 Mastermind, and he has his own podcast called The Business Method. He's interviewed multitudes of billionaires, many eight-figure entrepreneurs, tech startups, human optimization, like nootropics and meditation experts. Probably one of the most well-rounded gentlemen I have the pleasure of knowing. And we really, really had an excellent conversation. We start off with some just general optimization, communication skills, how to meditate, how to kind of get yourself in that flow state. I don't really know much about these topics, different brain waves and how to get into certain flow states, so to speak, and how to achieve that. I think as entrepreneurs, a lot of us will suffer from burnout because we don't take that 5-10 minutes to have a reset of our batteries, go for a walk, and we kind of go through the importance of that. But other than that, he's just a really great conversationalist. We go into lessons learned from him interviewing countless billionaires and millionaires, you know, the importance of having a mentor, what it means to be part of a mastermind, how to be challenged in your thoughts and set ego aside to really achieve a greater success. And, you know, please stick around to the end. By the way, he has this insane story about his great-great-great-grandfather that involves the Comanche Indians. It's a really, really excellent listen. I didn't expect to even go into that territory, but it's a great thought process on legacy. And he starts off with his great-great-great-grandfather. So stick around. Again, this gentleman's name is Chris Reynolds. You really, really won't be disappointed. And without further ado, let's get into the show. What's going on, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Service Business Success with your host, Steve Klass. I am beyond excited to have my dear friend, Chris Reynolds, here with me. For those of you who don't know Chris Reynolds, he is the founder of M3. Think of it as like a secret spy network of entrepreneurs. It's not that exclusive. You don't have to have a secret password to come in.
Not yet.
You do. It's a debonair presence here. And I had the pleasure of meeting this gentleman almost serendipitously. I was a part of another networking event. Shout out to Travis Sherry from Location Indie. And I said to him, I'm like, man, I have a burning desire to meet other entrepreneurs and I don't know how to get started. I feel like I'm kind of caught on an island where there's no support network here. And I'm kind of like shouting out to the void. And he's like, well, I know a guy named Chris. And why don't you talk to that guy named Ray, who's in the corner there, you might have a good conversation. And I had an excellent conversation. And lo and behold, he's like, you should talk to Chris. And I kept hearing Chris Reynolds' name. I looked him up. He has a really cool podcast called The Business Method. And I did a deep dive. I have never encountered along an entrepreneurial journey someone who is so vested on the success of others. And he, number one, has interviewed hundreds of millionaires and dozens of billionaires. Probably, I would hope, Chris, at this point, a world record, you would think, on billionaire interviews?
Not yet. Don't give me that yet, but I'm striving. I'm striving.
He's striving there. But it's my distinct pleasure to meet and get to know Mr. Chris Reynolds and to be blessed to have this conversation with him right now. So, Chris, thank you so much for coming on the show, man. This is a real treat for me.
I'm excited to be here, Steve, and let's make a good podcast. And all that flattery you gave to me, I could give right back to you. And one of these days, I'll be introducing you on my podcast, I'm sure.
There we go. I got to hit the double eight figures. We'll get there. One day at a time, man. But I would love to get a brief bio on your background. For listeners who don't know who you are, please take the next 60, 90 seconds, kind of give the people a little bit of an insight of who Chris Reynolds is.
Yeah, that's a really deep question because I've been an entrepreneur for 15-ish years now. So I could go down many rabbit holes with that. But, you know, the short synopsis is grew up in Missouri. I wanted to be a farmer growing up. I came across the book, The Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and The Game, Cash Flow. My mom actually bought them both for me. And it changed my worldview. I decided to stick around college and go to grad school. And instead of getting an agriculture degree, I got a general business degree for graduate school. And then kind of after that, I dove into the world of business. And not too long after that, entrepreneurship. I started as an independent contractor selling real estate, investing, education for a company that was kind of a competitor to Robert Kiyosaki's business at one point. Then the Great Recession of 2008 happened, and that wiped me out. At the time, I had a cool sports car. I had a 2004 Nissan 350Z, lived in a swanky apartment in Scottsdale, Arizona. And that recession wiped me out and most of my friends, and I went broke, very, very broke, to where I was eating like Wheaties with water in it and eating like canned corn and green beans for dinner. But at the same time, I always had this like underlining feeling that I was still going to help a lot of people and that I was still on the right path, even though, you know, people I went to grad school with were, you know, out making a lot of money and doing really well for themselves. And here I was, you know, had 54 cents in my bank account. I eventually came across the book, The 4-Hour Workweek, and that was a new paradigm shift for me. I knew immediately when I read that, I think in 2009, that was going to be my life. And within a year and a half or so, I had started selling or building niche websites online and had bought a one-way ticket to Costa Rica to go live this 4-hour work week dream. And that was 2011. Spent 10 years traveling the world as a digital nomad and continuing to build things online throughout that time. And eventually starting a podcast, which is what we have now today, what you mentioned earlier. And it's kind of led me down this rabbit hole to where I meet Steve Klass and get to come on his podcast.
Well, not just me, a bunch of other really cool, amazingly successful people. To name a few, I know that you've spoken to Alex Ramosi, you've spoken to Richard Koch, a couple other billionaires as well, people that are really, really trendsetters. So quite a journey in the past, I would say 12 or 13 years at this point for you.
Yeah.
Pretty cool, man. As an entrepreneur, you know, I always suffer from shiny object syndrome, right? Where I always have this new idea I want to pursue and it takes a lot to restrain me. Now, when you were successful, you know, the market crashed during the Great Recession and you were left at that point with 54 cents in your bank account, you started building up these websites. How hard was it for you to find something like the podcast and stick with it for, you know, now for over a decade and have that grow? Comparatively to say, okay, let me just give something else a try. I think there's a better opportunity. Like, what kind of restraints did you have to self-check?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, we're not quite at a decade, just for accuracy. We're about 9 years, I think, this month, actually, or last month. But anyway, I've just always enjoyed two things, meeting new people, networking, and having these conversations where you can learn from. And the idea from the podcast started from at the time, I had a business called The Entrepreneur House, where people would come and they'd live for a month in different cities around the world. And we were having these amazing conversations at lunches, at dinners, on walks, you know, at the gym, in our apartments, wherever we were at. And I was, you know, podcasting was still roughly fairly new at the time. This is 2015. And I just thought, like, why aren't we recording these conversations? It doesn't make any sense not to. And so I recorded about 30 or so conversations. And then I thought to myself, okay, what can I do to really like take this to the next level, to where I'm going to continually grow under the umbrella of the podcast and still enjoy over time? And so I think it's just like with anything, like you and I have many friends that have burned out of businesses. They run them for 3 to 5 years, 7 years or whatever. It's not really in alignment with their bigger vision of themselves. It was just a way to make money, a way to challenge themselves at a time. And then they just kind of lose that gumshoe. I think the different thing for me on my end was that I could never, for more than like a year, get involved with a business that really wasn't aligned with who I am. Maybe 18 months. I did that with the mortgage business. It lasted about 18 months and I was just like, I got to get out of this, right? It was to learn and then I had to get out of it. And so with the podcast, I wanted to design it in a way to where I could continually grow. There was always going to be a money-making opportunity with it, right? A financial reward from it. And I could be around the people that I wanted to be around. So that's why I started creating it in series. So I created a series of 100 episodes with 100 entrepreneurs that have made $100,000 online. And then I did those 100 episodes. And then I thought, hey, let's do this again with seven-figure entrepreneurs, people that have built, you know, $1 million online businesses. And then I finished those 100 episodes. And then I thought, you know, let's do the 8 and 9 figure, like the big names in the entrepreneur world. And I would make a list of like my top 100 people and I would just start reaching out to them. So if I was having the same conversation over the past 9 years with the same type of entrepreneur, I would have definitely burned out. And I definitely wouldn't be doing the podcast. But having those series kept me going. And it's really built what we have today. Like, we do events literally with billionaires. And that, and you came on one, you're getting ready to come on another. Like, that is an incredible thing. And I would have never imagined going to my small college, agriculture college in Missouri. That
good old farm boy.
Yeah, yes. That I would be at this level. But it was all from one, staying in alignment with like who I was and what I really enjoy doing and having the ability to grow through that process. Not to say if somebody gets involved in a business that's, you know, not really in line with who they are is a bad thing. It's not. It's just one chapter of your life. And then quite often we hold on to those chapters of our lives longer than we really should, instead of just like closing it and then moving on. So our friend, my friend, your soon to be friend, Richard Koch, he has this book called Super Connect. And I'm reading it now for the first time. And that's one of the things he talks about. He talks about that most people stay in their networks because much longer than they really should, because it's their identity and it's their social network. And it's like where they get validation. And the way to grow significantly, 2x, 5x, 10x, 20x, is to connect with these networks that are on a higher level, that and go ahead and choose consciously to leave the networks that served you in that, you know, that life. So I'm no longer connected to the network of my college. You know, I was in the agriculture frat. I had great friends there, but I'm not really connected to that network anymore because, one, I don't have the bandwidth, but two, it's not really in alignment with my goals right now. And I think that's a powerful thing because a lot of people, this is a long-winded answer, I hope you don't mind, Steve.
No, but fantastic.
Yeah,
please.
Because a lot of people, they just get attached to, maybe it's their faith-based network or their family network or their identity of their family or who they are, their heritage, you know, Irish, Italian, Jewish, whatever it may be. And instead of like consciously really looking at it like, hey, what are my goals and where are the networks or who are the people that are going to help me achieve those goals? Because the reason why you joined M3 or any network that I've ever became a member of was because I was fairly certain that that network was going to help me get to another level and do it much faster than the current networks and the people I was surrounding myself with. And it doesn't mean that you don't love the people or the networks or the communities that you were once part of and you don't wish them well. It just means that there's always a time for one, you know, a lot of...
There's a season.
There's a season.
Right.
There's the chapters in our lives for one network or one community. And most people just hold on to those and want those chapters to go much longer than they really should.
Yeah, there's a mutual friend of ours, well, mutual friend of yours, and I had the pleasure of meeting him once, a gentleman by the name of Trayton McLean. For those of you who don't know who he used to be the owner of the Houston Astros. And something really stuck with me that he said was, you are the sum of the five people you surround yourself with. And I know that sounds cliche, but man, is that the truth of it.
Yeah.
And that's why I've joined memberships like M3 to elevate myself, because I feel like I am far below the entrepreneurs in that group, but it's something to aspire to reach the goals. It's for personal and business growth.
Yeah.
So thank you for what you do there. And I kind of want to touch upon something that you mentioned there, finding stuff that you're aligned with. Speak to me about your personal journey of finding the connections of like, hey, I'm really good at this and I really enjoy this and there's a way to monetize this. What advice can you give to someone who is maybe struggling to find that purpose? Like, what helped you kind of get through that and step on the accelerator once you found it?
I'll give a short answer. I think everybody knows really what their purpose is. I think you've put a lot of clutter in your brain on top of whatever purpose you have, most people have, that makes it difficult to tap back into what that purpose is. So there's this whole thing of like, oh, you've got to find your purpose. You already know what it is. Like every single one of you, every single person out there, they already, you know what it is. It's deep down inside of you. Paulo Coelho talks about this. He's the author of The Alchemist. He talks about there's a voice behind the voice, right? A thought behind the thought. So we have our thoughts, our daily thoughts, they're racing in our mind. And then you have these thoughts behind the thoughts. And it may be like, I really want to travel the world, though I have this nice, safe, secure job or this nice, safe, secure business. But deep down inside, I've got to see the world. And you've been longing for it for 5, 10, 15, 20 years. And it's been, you know, telling you this whole time. When you kind of surrender and just believe and take action on those thoughts behind the thoughts, that's when things start to unfold for you in ways that you could never imagine, right? That's the premise behind the book, The Alchemist, right? Following those thoughts behind the thoughts. And you always have them. And they're always there. And they're always whispering to you. And they're always saying, Steve, do this. Go to Morocco, Steve. Go to Portugal, Steve. Go to Barcelona. Do your TEDx talk, Steve. They're saying, Chris, you can interview 100 six-figure entrepreneurs. Chris, start a podcast. Chris, you can interview billionaires. Like, totally, why not? And you just have to act on that. And the first step, you know, if you haven't done that in a while, is act on it in small ways. Maybe it's getting a book that's about that subject. Maybe it's, you know, adopting a child or doing some charity work somewhere. Maybe it's starting a business. Maybe it's growing your business. Find a book. And then just start giving a little time to that pleasantly every day, every week, and giving more time and attention to it. I like the stoic attitude is give 2 hours a day to whatever passion you have. If you have a family and a job and you still have to chunk out like 2 hours a day for whatever passion that is. And if you can't afford 2 hours a day, you know, maybe start at 2 hours a week or 20 minutes a day. You can always afford 20 minutes in a day, right? And you start there and the more you do it, the more it'll compound, you know, start, you know, 20 minutes a day for 2 weeks and just give some time and attention to that. You know, research more of that, you know, whatever it is. And it'll really start to unfold and you'll go down rabbit holes that you never dreamed of. You'll find people that are in alignment doing similar things. And just because we've been doing this for years, like yourself and me and the friends that we know, we've been following that bliss for years, doesn't mean that we won't come to a time when it becomes challenging and our thoughts become clouded again, then we have to re-tap back into that. I just got advice from a mentor today who said, you know, Chris, like you need to dive deeper into meditating and thinking about those thoughts behind the thoughts about what's stopping you from going to the next level. And it made a lot of sense because we get busy with life. We get busy with tasky things. You have a family, right? I've got a lot of things going on. I'm managing 3 different businesses right now. Right. And so it's easy to get bogged down, especially if you're a hard worker, into the tasky, mundane, working on the business things, where we really have to step back and say, you know, I really need this vacation. I really need this time to myself. I really need to go on a 2-hour walk every day, because thinking is quite often just as important or more important work than the work that we're doing on a regular basis. And getting our clarity of thoughts, what's in alignment with what we really want to do with our lives is the most important, because, you know, as well as I do, you know, at the end of our days, when we're lying on our deathbed, nobody sits there and says, I wish I would have worked more. Nobody says, I wish I would have started more businesses, right? I wish I would have made more money. It all goes back to like, oh, what's that thing that I really knew I should have done that I didn't do?
And so many people fail to take that small actionable step.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be some grandiose vision either. It can just be sending out an email or a message, just the start of a journey.
Yeah.
And it's a shame, because I think a lot of people, one of my favorite quotes of all time, the mass of men lead lives of quiet desperation, right? So Henry David Thoreau.
Yeah.
And it's, you get into this routine of just, I'm not really suffering, you know, it's not that bad, and we'll kind of keep it going. And, you know, I'm sure, you know, if you're a business owner, yeah, I'm making money, so I can put aside the wayside. Maybe I want to you know, do what I want to do, what you did, hike Santiago.
Camino de Santiago, Chile. Yeah.
Yeah, Camino de Santiago, or your, it doesn't have to be that long of a you know, pilgrimage. It can be as simple as, I want to just take 2 days to myself and go explore someplace or do something new.
Yeah.
And I think people have that analyst paralysis for sure.
Yeah.
And they always put it off. There's no sense of urgency that's there. And I always advocate, life is short. Act as though there is always a sense of urgency.
Yeah.
And the good things will come of it.
Yeah.
So I would love to dive into some, you're a huge fan of this. I'm just starting my journey on this, but I know that you're into meditation. You're what I would call human optimizer, right? You know the tricks of the trade, or the continuous study of them, to optimize performance and really achieve mental clarity. Walk me through some of the basic steps someone could take to maybe achieve that higher level state, like whether it's a daily journal, meditation, cold plunges. What have you, from the people you've interviewed and spoken to and your own personal beliefs, what have you found to be the most transformative?
That's a really great question, and I probably have a list of them. So I'm going to kind of answer it how I answered your question earlier, is I think most of us really know the things we need to do that makes us perform kind of on a higher level, but a lot of us avoid those. It's the food that we eat that makes us feel really good, the exercise that we've done that is really in alignment with our bodies and our minds. It's the maybe meditative or spiritual practice that you did once upon a time that you really enjoyed and you're like, oh, this feels good. I should do more of that. But then you decided not to, right? And so, you know, for each and all of us, it's just like anything. Each person needs something different. I love my routines and my practices, but I love having a variety of them and then changing them on a regular basis. So I don't think there's any, you know, routine or practice that I've stuck with for more than like a year and a half other than running. And it's because I like learning about those new practices and seeing how they affect me and my performance. I'm just like having that liberty to do that because that helps me learn more about optimization. And then it helps me learn more about how I can, you know, perform and share it with others. But there is one chart. Dumb it down as simply as possible. There's one graph or chart, or I call it a graph or chart because that's how I first saw it, thing that I think will change anybody's lives if they really know about it. And it is understanding our brain waves. Now, we have, for the most part, for the easiest way to explain it, we have four different brain waves, right? We have beta brain waves, we have alpha brain waves, we have theta brain waves, and we have delta brain waves. Now, right now, you and I are probably in a beta brainwave. So those are everyday waking state of mind. Now, the vast majority of people, the vast majority of fear and anxiety that we feel is when we have high beta. And if you look at a brain scan, when somebody's in high beta, they're having high beta brainwaves, it kind of looks like an earthquake, like a seismograph, just and it's actually the same things happening in our brain. It's just kind of going crazy. It's a little out of whack, right? And so if you're feeling fear and anxiety, you're probably in high beta. And you don't want to be in the state to work or to make decisions, or you can't focus. You can't get into like a better
brain
state.
Would you say this is like a fight or flight mode? Is that another way to say it?
Quite often. Okay. Yes, absolutely. You're fight or flight or freeze. There's a third F. So then let me explain the rest of those, and then I'll talk about the easiest way to change those brain states. So when we're working and we're in what they call flow state nowadays, and you work and it, you know, you work for like 3 hours and it seems like 15 minutes and you get so much done. Generally that's in alpha state or on alpha in the border of theta state. Theta state generally is like a meditation, you know, a good solid meditation or right before you're about ready to go to sleep. And then delta state is unconscious, whether you're sleeping or somebody hits you and you're knocked out. And now people that meditate for years, like these monks in Tibet, they can actually get into a delta state through meditation, but you're still kind of unconscious at that point. So the goal is like, the most important thing here is like, okay, if I'm feeling fear and anxiety, this isn't a great brain state. This isn't a great body state. You have fear and anxiety, you're getting more cortisol in your body, more adrenaline in your body. It's harder to make decisions. You're more emotionally reactive. Your prefrontal cortex is actually not working as much, which is what manages those thoughts and those decisions. the best way to do that, and this is for the vast majority of people, especially us working on computers where we don't even have to get up off of our computers, is to breathe and to take a step and do some deep breaths, where that will actually take our brain waves down from high beta to beta. And if you do it a little longer, like a couple of minutes, like even into alpha, and you'll feel really good. You can actually, if you're in tune with it and you practice it a while, you can feel the tension release in your body, and you can feel kind of that cortisol wash out of your body. And you can do it in a chair, or you can stand up and you can do like the Superman pose and look up, or you can just sit here and breathe.
Tony Robbins is thousands exactly. That just kind of doing this pose for whatever 30 seconds. And it really does trigger you to get back to a much calming, more powerful state of mind.
100%. And if you can't get up from your computer, just take some deep breaths. And probably the most effective and easy one is the box breathing. So like 5 seconds in, 5 seconds hold, 5 seconds exhale, 5 seconds hold. Do that for
and
a couple
Wim
minutes.
Hof, a variation of that. Yeah.
Wim Hof as well. The special forces are big on the box breathing. I've done, you know, both of them work great. But practice, see what works for you. And that is probably the easiest and the best. I would recommend anybody like Googling brainwave chart and just seeing the difference in brainwaves. And I've gotten to the point where I can call out whatever brainwave state I'm in. I'm like, oh, I'm in high beta now. Let's do some breaths. Oh, I'm an alpha now. Okay, let's flow, right? And I know that if I'm in high beta, that it's not a good time to make decisions. It's not a good time to have deep conversations or important conversations. It's not a good time, you know, for any of that. What it is a good time when I'm in high beta is to take a break, take a walk, you know, hold my breath. Because if you hold your breath, then your brain's going to actually slow down and say, hey, Chris, you dummy, like stop, you're not breathing right now. Something's just going to happen, right? And it'll take your brain away from whatever's stressing you out.
Yeah, for me, it's always been walks. If I ever feel like I'm going into high anxiety or really stressed out mode, I have to leave the desk and, you know, weather doesn't even really matter, weather permitting, I get an umbrella and I just go for a 5 to 10 minute walk. And it never makes the situation worse. I'll say that. It doesn't always solve every problem.
Yeah.
But it has it where there's a resetting of the batteries.
Yeah.
And I think people don't know how to get out of that flow state. I think people know breathing is essential, right? It's been around for millennia. But when you're in that high anxiety mode, the theta mode or the...
High beta.
Yeah. When you're in that high beta mode, it's hard to have a self-actualization where it's like, okay, I got to calm myself down.
Yeah.
Yeah, to reset the batteries.
Yep.
So that's very invaluable advice.
Yeah.
I was taking notes selfishly to look up afterwards. We're done here just to see how I can apply that to my own life.
Yeah.
And how disciplined are you when it comes to like running, daily workouts, jujitsu? How does that affect your daily life? Do you think that someone should incorporate this into like their day to day, where it has to be like, hey, every time at 11, I'm going for a jog or exercising? Or do you have it where it's more free flow state where you get the workout in, but you don't have to stick to a schedule? What's personally worked for you?
Personally, I day-to-day doesn't work for me for whatever reason. And I've always been like that. I've always needed some time off through the week. Now I have had times, like I mentioned, I've over the past 2 years, I stopped running because I'm doing more jujitsu. But for years, literally like 20 years, I ran all the time. And quite often I would run Monday through Friday, you know, but for about 30 minutes each. But I think there's for me, sometimes like right now, because jujitsu is actually more intensive than running, it's like 3 to maybe 4 times a week. And that's it. Cause I need that break in between. And that's just what my body needs. And again, going back, it like differs for everybody. And this is where trial and error, you know, really works. But for me, cause I'm very involved in jujitsu nowadays, it's a Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, or Sunday, are my jiu-jitsu days. And then I've also incorporated, based off of, who's the quarterback from the Patriots?
Tom Brady,
yeah. Okay. for his entire career, he always did 90 minutes of recovery for every training. So even if he's going out and tossing the football for a few hours, 90 minutes of recovery, right? And I was like, wow, that's huge. Because if we want longevity in our life, we want to perform at a higher level, just like him, we have to incorporate regular recovery, especially as you get older, right? And so I have a membership at a spa. So after every training that I do, I go and do recovery. So I do cold plunge, sauna, cold plunge, jacuzzi bath, bubble bed. And so we have a bubble jet bed and then cold plunge sauna, right? And, you know, that's a world of difference. And this is why, you know, saunas and cold plunges have gotten more popular over the years, because they work. They work really well. And we all want to perform at these higher levels. And we want to do it consistently for years and years to come. And we've just got to keep incorporating it. So, yeah.
Yeah, I can say that having all of this health optimization, for me, I started incorporating sauna and cold plunge into my, not want to say daily routine, but definitely on a weekly basis. And I just noticed just such a stronger mental clarity and sharpness of focus when I sit down to do the deep work, as Cal Newport likes to say. And it gets me into that flow state, so to speak. So this is essential for any entrepreneur out there. I would encourage you to really achieve the goals you want.
Yeah.
So eventually, all of us will suffer from burnout if we don't have that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a fact of life at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So I know that you've interviewed plenty of people. I mean, all of entrepreneur base. Would you say that there's one resounding theme, or maybe we can encapsulate this into just, you know, 3 to 5 key bullet points that you've noticed across all of these entrepreneurs on, they say, hey, I'm seeing this as a habit that leads to success. Is there anything like a key note that you can kind of take out from all these conversations? Not a hard job at all, considering you probably have hundreds of hours of conversation to shift through, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when it comes to entrepreneurship, it's a really easy one. Is just, you don't give up. Like, you only fail when you give up, because there's no glass ceiling with entrepreneurship, right? And you know this as well as I do. Everything can change in your business with the right conversation. So you introduce me to somebody, I introduce you to somebody, it changes your worldview. All of a sudden, that conversation leads to something else and your business has completely changed. Revenue's changed, everything's changed. And so there's just limitless possibilities with entrepreneurship, and it only ends when you quit. That's it, right? And all these entrepreneurs know it. And that's about as clear and concise as I can get with it. Just really never give up. Like, it only ends when you quit.
It's true. And I think a lot of people will think sometimes like, well, as long as I don't give up, I'll make it. You also have to have the clarity of mind to know when to pivot if an ideal is failing. So that doesn't mean you quit business altogether.
Exactly.
You say, hey, maybe this product or service isn't quite giving the output that I thought it would be.
Yeah.
So I'll add to that don't quit, but also make sure you have enough pivots left in you to keep the business going along and realizing when it's failing. Yeah, it doesn't mean that you're quitting entrepreneurship. It just means that you're just going on a different path based on the measurements of your clients.
Yeah, and sometimes a business is just a chapter in your life where that pivot or that time, you know, the time is to really quit or exit that business. It just means like there's another one, you know, that's going to come your way eventually.
I was just there just a few
you
months
were
ago.
Just there a few months ago, yeah.
Had to sell a business that was making decent income, but it was not. My mental state was not in a healthy place.
Yeah.
So you have to have the courage to step out of that, knowing that eventually I'm going to be okay.
Yeah.
You know, I'm getting there. So it's it's a journey for all of us, believe me.
Yeah.
And I can't, you know, stress enough the importance of also being surrounded by other entrepreneurs. That's one of the huge reasons I joined M3 Mastermind. What was your first mastermind or mentor that you had that really made you appreciate the higher level of thinking that you can get from being surrounded by like-minded individuals? And then go also, if you don't mind, going into a little bit of the importance of masterminds and what people can achieve through one.
Yeah. The first business group I belonged to was out of graduate school. I mentioned that I sold real estate investing education. So this was set up as a network marketing company, MLM style. And we had mentors, we had ongoing education, you know, and it was a great product and service. We were selling a $20,000 profit product, and we got 50% of the profit, which is great. Like, we could sell a 2-year college real estate college package and get 10 grand. And that community was massively positive. It's what got me out of the mortgage business, because the mortgage business was extremely toxic. And so to see the difference, I was like, I don't care if I make less money. I just don't want to be in this toxic environment anymore. And making that leap and being around very, very positive people was just really inspiring. There was a guy named Mark Sines. We're still friends to this day, who was my mentor at the time. The time I was like 27, I think, and maybe 26. He was 31. You know, he owned $1 million in real estate and just a cool guy who was a strong male role model. And what I realized, a couple things from him, he was the alpha of that community. And I realized I was very intimidated by other strong male personalities because I feared them, but I deep down inside, I wanted to be one. And so when I came across the awareness of that, I was like, oh, I shouldn't be avoiding Mark because he's challenging me. I should make him a friend. And that's what I did. And that reality like changed my life because, you know, again, Mark's still a very good friend to this day. And in every time, and it's probably why I set out on doing this podcast as well, every time I met a leader of a community or a strong entrepreneur personality that, you know, almost kind of intimidated me, or I saw something in them that I wanted to be more of, I just kind of went after the opportunity to create a relationship with them. And that was a huge networking skill that I didn't even know I had. And it was like, hey, here's this person doing this really cool thing. If I can be their friend, I can learn from them and we can have a fun time. And they'll teach me for free because I'm their friend. And all I have to do is like bring value to their life somehow through either friendship or, you know, having an enjoyable experience or jokes or
not being a taker.
Right. And that, you know, at the time I didn't have any money. So it was like, how can I bring value to those individuals while, you know, they're getting value from our relationship as well? And I was good at creating fun experiences. And which is kind of, you know, led me down the path of what we do now. It's like I could hang out with somebody like
I'll be laser tag, man.
Yeah. I could hang out with somebody with Mark Sines, who was up here for me at the time, and his little entourage. And we could go on trips to Mexico, or, you know, go on camping trips and just be a really fun guy to be around and also create like fun environments, you know, and enjoyable times together. And I was always good at that. And I just continued to do it with people that were here and here and here and here, which, you know, led me to the idea of the podcast. Look at all these amazing people we get on the podcast, and continued to nurture those relationships over the years, which now we're doing it with billion-dollar founders and billionaires, where it's like, hey, like we just did a webinar with $4 billion founders on it. And it was only because I nurtured those relationships and they liked what I was doing. They, you know, don't get a huge value other than sharing their wisdom with the world, you know, with my friendship. But for whatever reason, they liked me, you know, and they continued to do, like, you know, we went to Austin last summer and Drayton just, you know, really enjoyed all of us because we gave value to him. We were another generation of entrepreneurs that he could like pass down his legacy to. And as soon as like we left, he invited us back that evening. Like he enjoyed all of us. Right. And, you know, that was the value for me is, you know, going back to what we were talking about earlier, the communities that we need to grow with that are in alignment with our goals at the time. And you need to find those people and then in some way, either pay them for their time or give them value through a relationship somehow, so you can continue to grow the way that you want to grow over your career.
Absolutely, man. And I love that you said that you're initially intimidated because I occasionally have and I've been working on this inflated sense of ego of I'm the man. No one else in my family or friends ever started a business. No one ever had a 7-figure company, this whole thing. I could do no wrong fallacy, right?
Yeah.
And when people start to question, like people who are better than I am, quote unquote, and challenge me, my ego would flare up and say, what the heck, does this guy know? Like, he doesn't know what he's talking about. And it'd be defensive. And it's only really been the past few years that I've learned to be like, no, he's challenging me with these questions, or she's challenging me with these questions, and allowing me to really think critically of maybe I don't have it all figured out. And there's levels to this game that I can progress on, kind of like a video game avatar in a way. And once I changed that, my own paradigm on that, that's when I'm like, oh, this is fun. This is just me finding a coach. And I think when people think of mentorships or coaches, when we're playing sports as children, soccer, baseball, volleyball, whatever it is, we always have a coach. And I find it astounding that when you leave school, to have a business coach or a mentor is like, I'm not spending that kind of money. Like, even if the cost isn't money, maybe the cost is time, right? It astounds me that the people don't see the value initially of that, of having someone to aspire to reach the next, something to learn off of. So I that really, really speaks to me, kind of what that you were first intimidated, but realized like, oh, no, I need to hang around these guys more because there's something to it.
I think too, you know, it's worth saying that that feeling doesn't necessarily always stop. Like, you may have times when you shut that little voice up that say, hey, you know, listen to this individual, you know, be humble, you know, kick your ego out for a little bit, but then it may come back. You get a little success and then somebody tells you you're doing something wrong. You're like, shut up. No, I know what I'm doing, you know, and it's just in cycles. Like it'll continue to go over and over. And it's just like Drayton told us when we were visiting him in Austin, you know, he said, you always need somebody that can hit you in the gut. And, sure. And, you know, for Drayton, it was a guy, I think named Mike O'Connell, who would tell him, you know, his socks were stupid and to put on better socks or something like that. Yeah. And we need that continually over the years. And it's just part of being human and growth.
And I will add another caveat to that. Make sure the person that is giving you advice is a person you aspire to be. Yeah. Because a lot of times people will give you advice, well-meaning, could be family members, where the advice is, one of my favorite books is Richest Man in Babylon. And it's the idea of, I'll use this funny example, of sending a Missouri farmer to buy jewelry or sell jewelry and getting cons. Like, what did you think was going to happen? You sent someone who didn't have the proper skill set. It's the same thing when you receive advice. I think a lot of my millennial generation of go to school, get the education, you know, get the 9-to-5 job. If you're getting advice from those people or trying to tell you business advice of how to pivot, how to do things, just take it with a grain of salt. Again, well-meaning for the most part. It doesn't always be like, if you listen to Robert Greene, the author of 48 Laws of Power, it's not really always well-meaning. It could always be nefarious behind the scene. But in the most part, you have to make sure you're picking the right people around you.
Yeah.
That you know the advice comes from a place of maybe tough love in some areas.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you can achieve that next level for sure, man.
Yeah.
And that's why I love masterminds, because I always feel challenged every time I step into a room with other like-minded individuals and high achievers that question my foundation of beliefs.
Yep.
And I continuously look for that, because every time that happens, I just come out stronger on the other side. I'm like, man, that's a great point. I never thought about that. And then the pivots start to happen.
Yeah.
So it becomes so invaluable.
Yeah.
And I think you're only given a couple of aha moments in your life. I mean, Chris, I would love to know so you're delivering this podcast. What was the moment of creating M3? Really, from my own knowledge, like when did that come after the podcast, I would assume, or was that before, kind of intrinsically grown?
Yeah, actually, M3 came from masterminds that we created because of COVID. And COVID happened 2020, March 2020. I think in late April, we released COVID Crisis Masterminds. And they were just going to be free for 5 weeks. And, you know, we got like 72 people to sign up. And then after that, we created a paid version. We saw how rough, you know, how scared people were, how hard of a time they were having with their businesses because of the pandemic. And then we created a paid version of a mastermind. And then it just kind of evolved into M3. And eventually the group was like, hey, we'd like to go do something in person. This is 2021. And we were kind of talking like, we should name this thing. And I had a friend who is a good friend who had an event, and he called it W3. And I thought it was a really cool name. And somebody said, hey, why don't you name the masterminds, the group, Method Masterminds, because I had the Business Method podcast. And I thought, that's good, but I don't want to be known strictly as masterminds. Like, this is more than a mastermind. This is a community, right? Like, we, you know, we become friends together. Like, you and I are going to be friends for years because of this community, right? So I was thinking to myself, like you mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, how it's it kind of feels like a secret society or something. And it does, because I've always liked that idea of these cool, like, secretive societies. And so I was like, M3 sounds like a really cool name. So I asked my friend, hey, do you mind if I rip off your W3 idea? And he said, that's fine, go ahead. Because I'm not going to do that event anymore anyway. I was like, okay. And I said, and I was thinking to myself, what are three M's in the world of entrepreneurship that are really powerful and pillars of our journey as entrepreneurs? And obviously money is one of them. Like, you need to learn to be a good steward of money and to handle money well, and learn how to create money if you're going to be an entrepreneur. And then what else? I thought to myself, I thought, when we have a mission, then quite often in entrepreneurship, our business really excels, because it's no longer focused on just making money. It's focused on the mission, serving your clients and your customers, and creating more valuable experiences for them because you have that mission, your mission-based focus. Generally, there's a synergy that happens in special forces teams, in families, in any sort of team, business or otherwise, when there's a mission and people have clarity in that mission. And people can move mountains when people have clarity on a mission and everyone's focused towards that. So the mission was another very powerful M. And then I thought to myself, what's another powerful M? And I love the idea of mastery. We're all, you mentioned Robert Greene. He also has a book called Mastery. We're all seeking mastery in some form, because whatever form it comes in, you becoming a master or creating a masterful skill at something, creating a skill with masterful, what would you say that? Like a masterful level is the fulfillment that all of us are seeking. And it may be raising kids. It may be sewing. It may be SEO. It may be podcasts. It may be creating communities. It may be scaling businesses. It may be helping needy children. It may be growing a vineyard in Italy, whatever. You find life fulfillment when you become a master at something. When you have a mission, you go after that mission, you learn the skills and the trades of that. And then you start to leave a legacy behind, because you become so skillful at that. You then start to teach others, and that leaves that legacy, right? And whether your income and your money and your business and everything in your world is wiped out, as long as you have that skill, you can still start over and make money from that. And we've talked, you know, I do jujitsu. One of the greatest jujitsu trainers of all times is a guy named Hickson Gracie. And he talks about this as well. He created a career. He was the fiercest fighter. And he did MMA before MMA was MMA. He went to Japan and just smeared everybody. Went throughout the U.S., like, won all of his fights. And later in his age, I think he was probably in his late 50s, him and his wife decided to separate. They'd raised their kids. And she came up to him and she was like, okay, you know, we've created millions. You know, we have this nice house, cars, all these things. How are we going to split it up? And he's like, you know what? Take everything. He's like, I have the skill of mastery. You don't. You raised our family. You take all the money. You take all the houses. You take all the cars. You take everything. I'm just going to go live in a small apartment, start over from zero. And he did. But he could, because he had that skill of mastery. He made sure the mother of his children was taken care of. His children, you know, were taken care of. And he just went and started over and did what he loved, jujitsu. And he trained people in jujitsu. And, you know, now he's definitely a multimillionaire for sure. But, you know, that's the value of mastery. And those three pillars in M3, you know, money is not something to be feared or to become obsessed about, which is easy for both of those things to happen. It's something to master. And when you do, you become a much better entrepreneur. And then, you know, getting a mission is huge in your business team. And I know you've experienced it. When your teams are all in alignment, they have a mission, changes everything in entrepreneurship, in your business, and in any goal. And then when you become a master in whatever skill it is, and you could have two or three things or a handful of things over your life, could be chapters of your life, then you really get that life fulfillment that you're looking for. And so that's where the M3 came from.
That was probably one of the best answers to a short question I've ever had.
I want to do a presentation on it eventually.
You already have it, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, that's amazing. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
That's great. I was taking notes to edit these into reels. So don't worry, someone else will hear this as well.
Cool.
So as we kind of reach the end of this podcast, I would love to keep this going, but I know that unfortunately, unlike Joe Rogan, we can't have a 3-hour podcast here.
We can, Steve. We can.
Yeah, exactly. I'll be there in Barcelona. It'll be a little bit easier.
Yeah, we'll do it in person.
By the end of 3 hours, I'll probably be a little drunk if I'm having any sangria.
Hey, I have a podcast studio here. If you want to get me and Tommy and whoever else, we can riff away and do an episode for you.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we'll make that happen. Just a couple more weeks. So I always end the podcast with two more philosophical questions. And I always want an in-depth answer, something that can be applied to yourself, but also to the listeners at large. And I'll start with one. What do you want either your future children or your legacy to be? What would you say it's that they would be most proud of? Like whether you're an uncle or you have future children, when they reach adulthood, what do you want them to look at Chris Reynolds and say, wow, I can't believe he did X? What do you want that X?
I have a really cool story about this, and I've thought about this a lot, and I think it's a good way to kind of wrap things up. I have a grandpa that's my great-great-great-great-grandfather. His name's Grandpa Abraham. And
Abraham Lincoln?
No, not that one.
Right.
Yeah. Similar timeline, though. And we have a picture of him it's our family picture. My grandma, handed it down to us. It's a picture of him on the San Antonio newspaper in 1915. And he's sitting there next to his wife with 115 kids, grandkids, great grandkids, and great great grandkids standing behind him. And
that's wild.
It's wild, but here's the amazing part. He was born in Austria and he came to the US because at the time, the US was giving Europeans chunks of land, 640 acres. And he came across in a boat and landed in Galveston, Texas. And when he landed, all of his worldly goods were stolen. And so he had nothing. And so he wound up on this land outside of San Antonio. And all he had was his ability to work the land that he learned from his childhood. And he did a really good job. So what he did, somehow he created a partnership or a friendship with the Comanche Native American Indians of the region. Now, anybody that knows the history of this time, mid-late 1800s, the Comanches, their job was that, white people were taking their land, their hunting land, and their job was to raid and to kill white people because they were the invaders. And somehow he forged a relationship with the Comanches, and they had an agreement that anybody in Grandpa Abraham's family or friends, when they're out working the land, to smoke a pipe. And if they're smoking a pipe, then they know that's a signal that's a signal of friend of the Comanches. And they wouldn't raid or kidnap their kids or steal or burn down their cabins and burn their farms. And so this relationship went over years and years. And Grandpa Abraham then brought more family from Europe, continued to really establish San Antonio. There's a road in San Antonio called Eisenhower Road, which was named after his family in San Antonio to this day. And so he lived to 95 years old. Now, when he was 95, right after that picture was taken in the San Antonio newspaper, he was smoking this pipe in the barn, and he was shucking corn into this corn crib. And some embers from the pipe went out of the pipe down into the corn crib and lit it on fire. And so a 95-year-old man, he's got a bunch of livestock in the barn. He thinks, oh, I've got to get the livestock out. So he's getting the livestock out as fast as possible. Why this? The barn's going up in flames, No fire safety security codes back then. It was all wood and hay and, flammable material.
Very combustible.
Just burning. and he dies in the fire. And it's the same pipe that kept him alive for all those years, also killed him at 95 years old, but lived an amazing life throughout that, and died with 115 kids, grandkids, great-grandkids, and great-great-grandkids, right? And so I look back on that, and I think, like, that man, I'm alive today because of that guy, the risk that he took, and many other relatives as well. But he left a legacy that was impressive, and he did it through having a bunch of kids, right? But also that story of, like, coming to Galveston and all his worldly goods being stolen, and then forming a relationship with the United States government number one enemies, and maintaining that relationship over the years and becoming friends with him, you know, and trading partners with him. And that is a mind-blowing story. Now, I'm obviously not going to do what he did with my life, because it's a different time, right?
Like, well, in a way you are. You're in Barcelona right now as we speak.
I came back to Europe, so. Yeah. I decided to come across. I didn't take a boat, though. You know, I didn't get my worldly goods stolen. I've been ripped off a few times in different countries, but you know, and I'm not going to have 115, you know, kids, grandkids, great-grandkids, great-great-grandkids. But it's like, okay, what can I do that, you know, 200 years from now, people look back, my family members look back, and they say, wow, that was our grandpa. That's great-great-great-great-grandpa Chris. And part of that's the podcast. But then, like, at the end of my days, like, what do I want in my tombstone? What do I want that to say? And that's your legacy, right? We talked about, like, you know, what you, when you do die, you know, when you're on your deathbed, you know, what's the life you're going to leave? Are there going to be regrets behind it or not? And really the thing is like, I want to be a person, and I would love this to be on my tombstone. Here lies a man that did everything he could to make a world a better place while he's here. Just as simple as that. And you do that in so many different ways, through entrepreneurship, through going after your goals, through creating environments where I can meet awesome people like you, to where your dreams can come more into fruition by meeting these amazing individuals and, you know, going to the next level with your business and life. And that's what it's all about, you know, because Laird Hamilton, you know, I interviewed Laird, big wave surfer. A few years back, and I've always been a huge fan of his. And a quote that really sunk in with me was, my biggest fear is a half-lived life. And that's, you know, probably the best fear that you could ever have, is to be scared shitless of living a half-lived life, which forces you into taking action, into going after the things you really want to do in your life.
Very true, man. That's powerful. I almost don't want to ask the last question here.
We can.
Because I don't know how we could top that. We'll see. Thank you for that. I got to look up, I wonder if I can look up a good old Abraham Reynolds, or I think you said mentioned a different last name.
Yeah.
That's a hell of a story, man.
Yeah.
Wow. I just have thieves and murderers, and their names are forgotten.
We've got a few of those as well, you know. Don't worry, everybody does.
Yeah. But this last question I ask every single guest: if you had to rewind the clock with the wisdom that you have now, and you're speaking to a younger man, maybe someone who's an undergrad and who's right in the middle of agricultural school,
yeah,
what advice would you espouse to the younger version of Chris, based on what you know now?
I would just say, you know, kind of like what we've talked about this whole podcast, like, you've got dreams, you've got a purpose, you know what it is, go after it, and go after it hard. Like, don't hesitate. You know what it is.
Do you think you were ready at that when you were that age to go after it? If somebody had the proper guidance?
Yeah, in my own way, I was going after it in different ways. You know, making it to grad school was the farthest anybody in my family lineage had been to through school. So that was a huge thing. My dream was to be a farmer, even though I had farmers in my family. That was a big, you know, dream of mine, and I went after it, although it hasn't come to fruition yet. Still working on that one.
Come there.
And I was just doing it in different ways, but it just wasn't under the theme of entrepreneurship at the time. So, go after it. Think about those thoughts behind the thoughts. Like, they're there. You know what your dream is. You know what your purpose is. Pull the trigger and go hard. And the harder you go after those dreams and goals, the happier you'll be at the end.
A man after David Goggins' own heart.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Chris, this has been wonderful. I really, really appreciate your time. I hope people listen to this twice, because there's some really great gems in here. So thank you so much for your time. This has been a delightful trip.
Anytime, buddy. Let's do it again sometime.
Yeah. I'll see you soon in a few weeks, man.
Yeah.
And before we hop off, If anyone wants more information on M3 or they want to take a tune into your podcast, which I highly recommend, where can they find you?
Yeah, M3.club. If you want to learn more about our community and the fun things that we do a couple awesome events per year. One event is called a Titan Talk, where we go hang out with a billionaire. Steve's coming. He's come to one already. He's coming to another one in Portugal with Richard Koch. And then we have an amazing community for people that have built sustainable businesses. And then the podcast is thebusinessmethod.com. Right now we're interviewing $100 billion founders, and that's a lot of fun. So come join the journey with us.
Let's do it. All right. Thank you again for tuning in to another episode of Service Business Success with Class. I'll see you guys on the flip side.
See you guys.
Take care, everyone.
Thank you for tuning into Service Business Success with Class. Are you craving more strategies to supercharge your business growth? You can connect with me at successwithclass.com or on my Instagram at Stevie Class. And remember, when you hit subscribe, it's a win-win. You'll get your hands on all the latest tips, and you'll be supporting the show too. Thanks again for joining. Until next time.